We're talking about the power of poison in the natural world. A new exhibit at the Milwaukee Public Museum explores the intersection of venom and poisons du jour in nature, pop culture, medicine, and history. Have you ever had an encounter with a poisonous plant or animal? What happened? We're at 800-642-1234. Julia Colby is the zoology collection manager at the Milwaukee Public Museum. Julia, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you for having me.
All right, so what kinds of poisonous plants and animals can we learn about and see?
Well, there's everything from, you know, your jungle animals to plants that we use as common ornamentals and beyond.
Well, so I know that when we moved here to Wisconsin, I felt so happy that we were leaving fire ants behind. There are no fire ants here, and that's a real plus for Wisconsin. But what about these bullet ants and some of these ants that just deliver quite a punch in their bite?
Yeah, so those are tropical rainforest species. There's models of them in the exhibit, and the bites are just the venom, because it's injected into the body as opposed to ingested into the body like a poison would be, is really, really potent. And they're known, one of their common names is 24-hour ants, because it takes 24 hours before it stops to sting.
And I read somewhere that the sting can be so powerful that it actually cuts down on pain for some reason. Like the pain's so painful that it can help you not feel pain or something like this.
Yeah, so we actually see this in a lot of sort of natural venoms and poisons, is that there's some component that we can harvest, some component of the mechanism of the action that we can harvest and make into medicine. And so that's one of the species that scientists are exploring to look for novel painkillers, basically, because of the action of that venom. You can actually use it to stop pain.
Tell us about garter snakes. They're the only animal that can eat rough-skinned newts without being affected by the newt's poison. Why is that?
Yeah, so we have garter snakes here, but in the western U.S., there's a species of newt called the rough-skinned newt, and the newt produces a compound called tetrodotoxin, which works by paralyzing, basically, the nerve signaling in your body, and eventually, if you were to eat one, you would die. Because it stops your lungs and heart from working. And where the newt and the garter snake co-occur, so they occur in the same place, the snakes can actually consume those newts, which is great for the snakes because nobody else eats them. So it's a regular food source, a ready food source.
Oh, that's handy. Yeah.
And it's not great for the newts, obviously, because they don't want to get eaten. And so there's this like evolutionary arms race between the newts, who keep having to get more and more toxic, and the snakes, who keep having to build up more and more resistance to this tetrodotoxin.
That just doesn't sound too good there. Like nothing good can come of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know where it goes, but it is something that we see over and over in nature, that, you know, nothing comes out super poisonous or super venomous from the start. There's always some factor working against it or with it.
So why does poison exist in nature?
So it's often either a defensive or an offensive compound. So you either use it to catch your prey. So in the case of a snake's venom, that's what that's used for. But in the case of those newts, for example, it's a defensive compound. So they use it to not get eaten themselves.
What about plants? What in the plant world is dangerous and deadly?
Well, I mean, if you think about it, like poison ivy, we've all gotten poison ivy. That is a plant poison. It is an anti-herbivory compound. So the plant doesn't want to get its leaves eaten. And so it makes them incredibly, incredibly uncomfortable to eat. But there's also plants like a belladonna, which is a nightshade, digitalis, which are foxgloves. You might grow digitalis in your garden. I know I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they have compounds in them that are probably defensive in some way, but can definitely either be used as a poison or, in the case of foxgloves, as a medicine.
So do poisons exist all across the spectrum, or are there some branches like mammals, for example, that aren't ever poisonous?
No, it exists everywhere, mm-hmm. as far as we can tell. There are not a ton of mammals there's a couple venomous mammals and a couple poisonous mammals, but there's not a bunch of them.
Why should we know so much about these poisons and about these venoms? What's in it for us humans?
So, I mean, I think partially it's like understanding the natural world is a good thing to do because we live in it. But it's also, there's a lot of medical applications beyond just like the general fascination with how the world works, where, as I said before, you know, you have a snake venom that promotes, like it works by clotting the blood in whatever the victim is. We can actually take that clotting factor and make something out of it that is useful for somebody, for example, who doesn't have enough clotting factor in their blood.
We're talking about how toxins found in nature can be used for good and evil. Pick your poison, as they say. Julia Colby has done some of that picking for us. She is zoology collection manager at the Milwaukee Public Museum. She stays with us as we explore the new exhibit. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about poison in nature? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Back in just a moment on the Ideas Network. Talking venom and poison in nature, how it's used on the defense and offense. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. But first, we have a case of the spring pledge drive bug, and that's a great bite to get for sure. I am Kate Archer-Kent here with Jean Purcell. Good morning.
Good morning.
And you count on the Ideas Network for interesting conversations. We count on you to help keep these discussions on the air.
Listener support is the largest piece of our funding pie here that makes this show and all of the other shows that you enjoy in Wisconsin Public Radio possible. And that's why it's your gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. That's so important.
And we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right this very moment. It is from the Urban Land Interests, and it is up to $3,000. Your gift of $50 turns into $100, $100 turns into $200, and so on. Take advantage of this match and double your support for Wisconsin Public Radio programs when you give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yeah, really great opportunity to make your pledge go farther this morning. And when it does, of course, it will keep the Ideas Network healthy here, bringing you smart conversations about compelling topics. You know, you can count on hearing thought-provoking discussions every single day. And this morning is a good example of that. We started out with retirement insecurity. We're talking about poison right now.
Sure are.
I mean, who knew? I didn't, but I'm finding out here on the Ideas Network. And because WPR is listener-supported public radio, it's your gift now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. That really makes a difference because it makes these discussions possible.
Have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now. Match money on the table, and it's up to $3,000 thanks to Urban Land Interests. They're doubling every dollar you give, and it's their way of inspiring you to support Wisconsin Public Radio. Double the impact of your gift this very moment at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you get your 2019 WPR t-shirt, not only will you share your WPR pride with the world, you'll also enjoy the soft, stylish comfort of this quality cotton poly blend tee. Where will you show off your WPR t-shirt?
Oh gosh, I'd wear it everywhere.
To work, to the store, hanging out with friends.
Walking, when I go to the grocery store, I just want everybody to see it.
You can wear your WPR t-shirt so many places. Get yours now when you make a gift of $10 a month or make a one-time gift of $120. Here's how.
Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 to make your donation in support of the programs you count on. Good morning. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with Jean Purcell, and it's your support today of Wisconsin Public Radio that keeps all the programs that you enjoy going strong. And whether your contribution is $10 a month, whether it's $100 a month, we appreciate and we count on your gift.
We sure do. And the easiest way to make sure that your support for WPR is always current parent is to become a sustaining member. And I'm living proof of that because, you know, I would get my notice to renew and then it would be on my desk and then something would cover it up. And about 6 months later, I would find it. Once you're a sustaining member, that never happens because your monthly gift automatically renews, whether it's $10 a month, $100 a month, or the amount you choose. So get started now. I guarantee it'll feel great at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And it feels great just seeing it there on your statement, knowing it's taken care of. We have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now, and we still have a good chunk of match money here on the table. So make your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. As I do the math here, raise this break. All right. Yeah, we still have match money here. So make your support go twice as far right now.
And I was told there would be no math. So just for the record, you know, you can support the programs you value and you can show off your WPR pride when you ask for our 2019 WPR t-shirt. It's made in the USA. It shows how WPR in a graphic representation is everywhere that you are. You're in town, you're at home, you're in the great outdoors, you're in Wisconsin. So give $10 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And when you do, be sure to ask for your t-shirt.
And thank you so much for your support. Talking poison on the morning show. Poisonous plants, venomous animals, malicious minerals, got them all. These things have long fascinated us. Then they found their way into our books and movies. Shakespeare took dramatic advantage of the natural world, used herbs for curious plot twists. Think Macbeth. Exploring a new exhibit on display at the Milwaukee Public Museum. It's called The Power of Poison, and you can join in with your questions, your stings and bites at 800-642-1234. Julia Colby is zoology collection manager, and she stays with us. Julia, you know, besides poisonous things in the natural world, it seems that your exhibit also features myths and legends about poison. What are some of these things that are stories that are out there, but they're perhaps just false?
Well, you actually mentioned one of them when you talked about Macbeth. You know, that is actually a featured vignette of the museum or in the exhibit. And one of the things that the exhibit explores through that story is, you know, this idea of the witch's potion, which often include, you know, fanciful ingredients, but sometimes real ingredients as well. And so it talks about this idea of witches flying. You know, they hop on their broomstick and they fly off, and actually a lot of the ingredients that witches are supposed to have used have some hallucinogenic properties. And so, you know, correctly mixed and applied, they make you sort of hallucinate that you're flying. And so is that the origin of that supposition? We don't really know, but it is, it's really interesting to think and talk about.
What are some other common misconceptions about poison that your visitors might be able to debunk at this exhibit?
So some of it is, you know, the method of preparation and injection or ingestion of that. There's also a section about historical poisonings. You know, we all know, oh, Cleopatra, you know, she got bitten by the asp, but did she really? Like, there's a section that talks about, you know, what's the evidence for that poisoning? What symptoms would that produce? And you can sort of make your own conclusions there.
What do we conclude? What do we know at this point after we look at all the evidence?
Yeah, and that's sort of, I like to leave it up to people to make up their own minds on that one.
So, you know, you really look at a paradox here. Is poison something that kills, or does it save lives? Is it a toxin, or is it a medicine? Because we also use this stuff in cancer treatments and other types of medicine.
Yeah, and that's sort of the thing about the long-standing thing about poison is that, you know, the dose makes the poison. So salt is an example of this. We need salt to function. We need salt for our bodies to work. But if you have too much salt, it's poisonous.
When did scientists and physicians start discovering that poison found in nature can have medicinal value? Are there any stories about these discoveries?
There are. So I know Digitalis is a compound in foxglove. It can work to sort of help the symptoms or help arrest heart failure. But again, too much of the digitalis, and that was discovered probably some 200 years ago. But too much digitalis is very, very poisonous. Like, it'll kill you.
Are there any plants or animals that have developed poison to protect themselves from us, a human threat?
Probably not exclusively. Humans have not been on the evolutionary scene really long enough and been the sole predator of anything really to be the, to have driven that evolution, I don't think.
Oh, we're like the new kids on the block.
Yeah, exactly. We are. And so when we talk about, this cone snail or this snake is so, so venomous and it'll kill three people, we're looking at it with the wrong calibration on that scale. That cone snail or that snake, they don't eat people. They don't care that they're killing people. They want that little reef fish that they eat or whatever rodent that is out there that they're trying to eat. And, there's some animal out there that's super, super resistant to that venom. And we're just sort of accidental interlopers.
Well, Julia, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Julia Colby is the zoology collection manager at the Milwaukee Public Museum. We're talking about a new exhibit there on display into July that is looking at poison. Coming up, we have Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes here to talk about the governor's first budget. And you can join in with your questions about the budget at 800-642-1234. Stay with us for more conversation right here on the Ideas Network.